The real starting point for us in our growth is when we decided to adopt and run EOS ourselves internally. And so we went from being purely a founder-led organization where everything was kind of on him to a very healthy organization that has a strong leadership team, not singly dependent on just a founder.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I am the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company spend with magical features, but we're not here today to talk about that. Instead, I have the Focus CFO, Michael Steer, to talk about how they have gone through explosive growth in their fractional CFO business over the last number of years. So, Michael, thanks very much for coming along to the show. Maybe you could just give us a bit of a background of yourself and Focus CFO, where you are, etc., just to fill in the listeners.
Right now, I have two hats. I'm an area president in the Carolinas for Focus CFO, driving our growth and our service delivery in this area, along with several others. I'm also the fractional CMO or director of marketing for a fractional CFO company. So I do that as well with Focus.
You do a lot of effort in terms of reaching out, doing interviews and promoting the brand. In terms of business model for Focus CFO itself, is it a franchise? Is it wholly owned? Or is it how does it operate?
So it's a collaborative organization. Our associates are not W-2 employees, as it would be in the U.S. They're all, you know, essentially licensees or some of us are franchisees. But that's really just a technicality on the other side. We operate as one big collaborative organization. And so there's a strong culture within Focus CFO that's built around who we are, our core values, our best practices, all those things. So to the outside world, we're just one big organization.
So it's further away from something like Action Coach, where it's kind of, you get the training, but then it's up to yourself to run your own business. It's much more cohesive, you know, so much more consistent delivery model.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of our core values is continuous learning. And our associates are involved in our ongoing internal education on best practices, just who we are as an organization. So again, to the outside world, we look like any other organization with a strong culture.
I feel like we're going to play EOS bingo on this when you hear people talking about core values, you got a 50-50 chance they're using EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System, which I know you're a fan of. We call that relentless improvement. So let's see how many, if we can hit on any of those before we get to the end. So the growth has been very exciting. We all know what a fractional CFO is these days, but we'll get into that later. But you've had a lot of growth in the organization. How has that looked?
It's been a lot. I mean, Focus has been, it's one of the early pioneers in the fractional CFO industry space. We've been doing it for 23 years now. Like a lot of businesses, you see an elbow in our growth curve. And that's really been over the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 years. Last year alone, 2023, we grew something like 35% in just number of associates we have within this organization. And if you think about it, I mean, our CFOs are our product. And so that's 35% growth in your product, right? And what you're offering out there. That's pretty substantial for 1 year. And obviously, like any growth in any business, it's not just what you did in the last year that drove it, but it's, you know, all the foundational changes that you've made over several years to put yourself in a position to be able to grow like that and be able to do it in an effective way and be able to absorb them in and have that all those associates be effective, you know, right away. And so that's been, you know, years of development.
So very, very slowly and then suddenly all at once, seems like it's come together. Was it COVID? Was there some other inflection point that really sort of lit things on fire for you?
We're going to play EOS bingo again.
Yeah, let's go. Let's see what you got.
I'd say the real starting point for us and our growth was about, and I'm guessing it's maybe 6-7 years ago. It's when we decided to adopt and run EOS ourselves internally. And so we went from being purely a founder-led organization where everything was kind of on him to a very healthy organization that has a strong leadership team, not singly dependent on just a founder. And that has enabled us to really uptick the organization because there's just a lot more skills and expertise and quite frankly, capacity that's helped us drive what we've been doing over those years. And so, like I said, that's laid the foundation and we've incrementally improved our organization and that improvement in the organization has now been reflected in a much rapid growth rate behind it.
I was speaking this morning with Bridget Harris. She runs a SaaS business based out of the UK. And we were talking about, like, you know, company structures, traditional company structure. You have the board, the CEO, CMO, CFO, et cetera. Like, there's no real logical reason for that other than that's the way we've been doing it for decades and as long as companies have been around, I guess. This structure, this visionary integrator dynamic seems to be much closer to the way real businesses actually run. Like, it's how many times when you tell people about the visionary, like, oh yeah, he's all over the place, totally scatty, coming up with a new business idea every week. I guess the closest thing would have been CEO, COO, I guess. Who takes up those roles in focus?
So we have that same structure. You know, I guess, ironically, you can say, I mean, our founder was a CFO. When he started, he was a CFO for a public company. So you would think that would have a much more methodical mindset. But as a founder, you get absorbed into all of the stuff of the business. You're creating the vision. You're creating where it's going. You're the chief culture officer. You have all these different ideas about growth and things that you want to get to. And certainly our founder, Brad Martin, is that person. I mean, he's terrific and a great forward-thinking strategic vision. His forte was maybe not in the operational running of the business, but certainly as we started growing, it became that. You know, so the business just gets too large where any founder, regardless of their strengths, can't do it all. And that's the beauty of EOS. And you know, the big thing for him, and he talks about this all the time, was the key for him was finding the right integrator. And that integrator really has came in and helped professionalize management of the business. And the interesting part is, for most of us in the leadership team, we have multiple hats. We're all basically field executives ourselves. I'm an area president in the Carolinas. Our integrator is an area president in Cincinnati. Our lead CFO is also a CFO for certain businesses, our director of CFO support. So we only have a couple of full-time people on our leadership team, which means we're very grounded and very connected to the actual operation of the business and delivery of the service that we do, which I think is important. Now, as we grow, you know, and get much, much larger, you know, we may have to go to a full-time model just because the business is just getting too large.
Typically, if you're sitting in a corporation right now with 10 or 20 years of CFO experience, you're thinking about going out, becoming a fractional CFO, your choices are you step off the cliff and then you'll have to learn how to sell for the first time, probably, right? Do the CFOs themselves have to eat what they kill? Or how have you managed to skill that? Because that's not typically a CFO skill, right? Being able to go out and get business, pitch for business, et cetera.
One of the other key decision points that we made, or structuring decisions we made in the business several years ago that kind of also helped propel that, is that, you know, we started out the same way. You know, CFOs go out, find your own clients and do that in early days. And to your point, most CFOs are not very good at it. They're not wired for it. It's just not in their, you know, in their DNA, in their personality profile. So we separated out those roles. And so we have area presidents, we call them, like myself and my 32 other colleagues, where we're doing everything else. We're doing, you know, the partnership development, the networking, the business development, finding clients, et cetera. So our CFOs can literally just be the best CFO, fractional CFO, for however many clients they want to work for. That's one aspect of it. And they don't have to do any of the admin stuff, et cetera, that comes along with it. But more importantly is, think about it, for the demographic that we're searching for, which is people who have been CFOs for decades, right? You know, they, whatever it is, 10, 20, 30 years as a CFO, we're providing them an opportunity. And this is literally one of our mission statements. We have dual missions, is to provide them with their next best chapter, which means that they, you know, they're stepping down because they're done with working 80 hour full-time gigs. They want to have control over their schedule. So what we offer them is the ability to add, you know, have real meaning and value in the work that they do, working with however many clients they want to work with, because they're really appreciated by that, but they get to control their own schedule. So it's perfectly fine if they come in and say, hey, I'm good working with clients 2 days a week or three or four, whatever it is that is appropriate for what they want to do with their lifestyle. And those two or three or 4 days are completely dedicated to being a great CFO for two or three or four different clients along the way. So don't do anything else. That is the big attraction for anyone that's done that versus going out on your own and basically trying to start up your own business and build your own network and doing your own admin. And you wind up spending maybe half of your time on non-client work, which is not really what you want to do in the first place.
let's say I come along, I come to you, I've got 20 years experience as CFO. I say, listen, I want to work 2 days a week. I'm basically assuming I have the right experience. I'm inventory for you. Is that right? So Michael, you will then say, okay, I've got this guy, James, and I'm going to think about you. Or is there some commitment from the fractional CFOs to get involved? Or is it like, how does that work? Because typically when you get involved in a business, you know, you got to have some sort of quota, or if there's no sales involved, how do they prove their worth?
They prove their worth by adding value to their clients. And so it is a partnership or team. You know, it's a team. I'm a team with all the CFOs that are in my area here that I work with. And this goes with every other area president that's out there. So you're not on your own. So we develop a relationship. We decide what drives them, what interests them. Because some of them are like, hey, I'll work with anybody. I have other ones that say, hey, I only like, for example, I only want to work with clients where I'm going to be on site. I don't like remote work. I have other CFOs that come in and said, hey, I only want to do remote engagements or whatever, because it supports their lifestyle, or hybrid in between, or they only like certain industries or not, you know, whatever. You know, we work together to do that. And it's part of my responsibility to find them good opportunities to be successful fractional CFOs and help maintain that relationship. But we're busy enough. I mean, listen, I've CFOs that literally have joined in the last month and a half, and they're already working on clients. Right, because I have that backlog of opportunities, and it's constantly, you know, we're constantly balancing supply and demand.
That sounds like a pretty sweet deal from the fractional CFE. Those, I just get to rock up, decide to work as much as I want, as long as I got the right experience. I guess it takes a couple of months to get months, or even maybe a year, to find the first few clients. But once you have them, then you're in, and that's it.
Lately, it's been not even months; it's been weeks.
Well, that sounds good. I can see why fractional CFOs would want to work with you. Why would you want to do all that by yourself, et cetera? It sounds to me like you're almost like an agent for these highly talented people.
Yeah, I suppose you can call it that. I mean, I just view it as we're a service delivery team with our clients. It's not like I place them like, you know, like an employment placement agency where I place them in and gone, never talk to them again. We, myself and the CFO, are a service delivery team for each and every client. Now, the CFO is there. He's the primary. He's there every week in our model with them, literally on the leadership team for that client. And that's our model. If the client's not interested in that, then they're not a good fit. But I'm there meeting with clients typically quarterly, unless things come up along the way, and helping maintain the focus on what's the long-term goals. What are we trying to shoot for 2, 3, 5, 7 years out? And are we on path for doing that? What are the resources does that client need in addition to what my CFO is doing for them right now? Because as part of my role as an area president, I have a very extensive network of trusted partners, trusted advisors who I can bring in. And that happens all the time, literally within a business. So we're constantly looking to try to ultimately help improve the business of our clients in a broad set of fashion, not just with the CFO, but with an ecosystem around them.
I'm trying to find the holes here and I can't find them. So like, I had an agent when I was a programmer, but that was an agent. But you're working with another CFO. So it's not like someone who's just handing you off, trying to sell hours or whatever.
No.
It's much more a collaborative thing. You're working with that client. You are an expert yourself. You're working together with those guys. Okay.
We're not even an hourly basis. We charge on a monthly retainer. I would hate to be running an hourly business. Like if I was a CPA or an attorney, that just sounds awful.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It is and it isn't. It depends if you're going to work for me or I'm going to work for you. I like the hourly thing because anyone who ever comes to me and they're like, how do I get started? And it's like, well, just pick an hourly rate and start there. Because everyone's these days a bit too obsessed with charging for their value, not their hours, which I think is fair once you really are clear on what your value is. And then you're able to do that, but not before. It's an intermediary step.
And it's also a different model. You're talking about, you know, developers or programmers are doing project work. And that's different.
Right.
Right. We're entering into a long-term relationship with these clients. Typically, our average relationship length is 5, 6 years. Something like that. We've had clients for 12 or 14 years. So we're part of that business. So if you think about it, if you're counting hours in that kind of relationship, that's very counterproductive.
Right.
You know, we charge based upon the number of days per week that our CFO is going to be dedicated to that client. And obviously CFOs do work outside of the days, whatever, and that's fine. But it's a long-term value-added relationship.
It sounds like a great business. So we've covered, you know, where it's come from, where it's at now. I know I can ask this question because you use EOS. So what's your 10-year vision?
Our 10-year vision, that's a great question. We have, you know, metrics for how many CFOs we want to have, how many clients we want to serve, Et cetera. But really, you know, we're a national firm now. As you mentioned, we're probably now as of last year, the largest in the country, but we still have growth to do to be able to fully cover all the different regions within the US. And so we're strong, we're more dense and more populated in certain areas than others. And we want to continue to expand that out and really become, have a very substantial national footprint.
So let's flip it to the other side now. Let's flip it to the client side. So this is what you can do for a client. So, there's a anonymous question just came in here on Twitter. Let me just check this. So this technology CEO based out of Dublin is wondering how much it is he should pay himself. How would you handle a query like that? How would you go around thinking about what owners should, how they should remunerate themselves?
Ooh, that's a great question. Because obviously most of them are quite frankly, underpaid relative to if you brought in an outside CEO for the business. I would encourage them to think about it in two terms. One is, I mean, this is your business. You're 120, 150% into it. So don't cut yourself short as soon as you have the cash flow to do that. But on the flip side of that, we also counsel owners who really try to run it as their business as a lifestyle business, meaning that they're funding a lot of personal expenses through the business as well, which is okay if that's what you do, but that doesn't help you build value in the business ultimately. If your goal is ultimately to exit the business and sell it at some point down the road, I don't care how many years away down that is, presumably that's where you're going to get the most value, you know, ROI from your investment into this business, the time sweat. Don't treat it like a lifestyle business. You want to show that, hey, I'm profitable. We have growth. Our cash flow, our margins are growing, our revenue is growing. And if you're funneling a lot of personal expenses into that business, you're detracting from the presentation of that business and what it truly looks like and what it's truly generating out of there. So you got to, you know, make that trade-off. At some point, you're not running a lifestyle business. You're running a value creation business. And you have to make that decision. It's kind of a fork in the road.
So the answer I heard there was, most people underpay themselves if they went out to market and looked at it. And the other one was just don't live out of the bank again. There's an amazing entrepreneur called Laura Roeder, and she gives a great talk on this. It's basically she has her founder's pay. So the pay that she takes for owning the business, and then she has the pay she takes for working in the business. And she has two different numbers. They're written down and they're specific for each, which I like.
Right. And profit first, cash flow first.
So what's the biggest pain point you find the clients coming to you with? How do they stub their toe so hard that they're like, no, I can't do this anymore. My bookkeeper's not cutting it, or I'm just not. What's the biggest?
There's probably a handful of pain points that are usually the catalyst for the beginning of a conversation between us. One is that, and they're kind of all related to a certain fashion. My business has grown well, and it is continuing to grow. But we're falling over the front of our skis. We're operating like we were, you know, a half or a quarter of the size, but we're now here and things are just breaking all over the place. And we need more professional management. Related to that is growth typically is a torpedo to your cash flow because you're investing more in on the front end and you're not managing on the back end. And I've seen, even with my personal clients here, I've seen a couple of them that grew so fast that they almost went under from a liquidity problem, from a cash flow problem. And quite frankly, a lot of owners never really thought about what cash flow management means and how it's important. And that's really the oxygen to your business. And so their idea of cash flow was what was in my bank account on a Friday afternoon. And so just reorienting that model. So growth, cash flow perspective, they're getting tired. I've had owners who came into us and say, hey, I've been doing this for whatever, pick a number, 10 years, 15 years, whatever. I'm tired. I'm beat up. I just help me package this thing so I can sell. And really, that's not the objective. The objective is that they're too stuck in the weeds of their business and not working on their business. So we help them come in, get control of the business, help professionalize a leadership team, get them from being in the business to working on the business. And more often than not, 6 months, a year later, they forgot all the pain that they were having. And they were actually enjoying the business again. So then we help them get to growth. And then lastly, it's owners that are just concerned about, hey, listen, I have a vision. I do want to exit this business in whatever, 5 years, 7 years, it doesn't really matter. How do I position, how do I grow this business so it's something of real value that when I exit, you know, it actually will fund my, whatever my goals are, my personal goals are. You know, it's a retirement. It funds me to do, you know, move on to whatever next chapter I have you know, whatever it is. They're both their personal business goals. So it's really kind of a combination of all those things.
The burnout thing sounds super familiar. Dan Martell talks about how, in his experience, he's a business coach in the SaaS area, that most owners sell too early because they just get burnt out and they're like, they sell it for a pittance just to get out from under it.
Yep.
Or they just sabotage. They just like run it into the ground. So what you described there, now this is really getting into what a CFO is, because I've talked to dozens maybe now at this stage, and I'm still trying to answer this question really. But what you've described there could easily be said of a business coach, like, save me, I'm tired, I'm worn out, I'm all these things. Do you feel like a coach sometimes, Morten?
Oh, absolutely. I've had more than one client come back and relay to me that the biggest or maybe the most unexpected value that they got out of it, you know, obviously we've got control of the business from the numbers perspective, from the finance perspective, but it's having an outside perspective. Someone who's had, you know, decades of experience doing something else. Bring that experience in, because typically it gets very insular when you're an owner. Can be actually quite lonely. Having a person, someone you could bounce ideas off of. I've literally had spouses come to me and say, please take us as a client because he or she keeps wanting to bounce ideas off of me. I can't help them, right? Please come in, right? So we've had that. I've had clients tell us that one of the biggest value is, quite frankly, is your CFO comes in and he's a disruptor to my business because he's calling things out. And I know that he doesn't have a vested interest. He's not another manager of this product line or this division where maybe they're thinking about what's in it for me or protecting my job or whatever. So they can be completely impartial observers of the business and occasionally disruptors of the business, right? And do that as well. So those kind of things. And a lot of our CFOs have strong operational experience. Most good experienced CFOs have strong operational experience. So it's not just the numbers that are coming in. A lot of times, and why our CFOs really love doing this, you know, they'll walk the factory floor or the warehouse or the construction sites and understand the processes and how they tie them back in. Because quite frankly, usually for the businesses that we work with, they don't have a lot of great processes in place.
Right.
And so in helping to identify how to make the business just operate more efficiently and then tie it back to the numbers.
It makes sense that businesses, when they're earlier on, you're just getting it done. It's all operations, 100% operations. You start making money. You're not sure how. I've been listening to some, studying what PE firms do often now. One of the first things they do is they'll put in a professional CFO because that's where a leverage point is. People have grown like a frog getting boiled slowly. They don't realize, hold on, the finance is actually really important. Now, there's millions of lots of zeros involved here.
Yes.
And then things like planning become actual functional. There's zero point in planning when it's just you and your wife or whatever in the front kitchen doing what you're doing. That's a bad example, but you know what I mean? But then as you get bigger and, you know, things like budgeting and planning actually are functional and they actually can achieve goals, there's a certain level there. You see there's a revenue number around that, a head count. Where's the number where you're sort of into that zone where it's worth investing?
I get that question a lot. And we talk about, I mean, we've had clients that are, you know, from pre-revenue startups to clients that are close to $200 million in revenue, where you think they would have a full-time CFO. But we've been there for over, whatever, 12, 13 years, and they're just comfortable with that model. But I say our sweet spot for where most new client relationships come in, you know, we talk about 3 to 30 million in revenue. For me and some of my clients, I'd say, you know, the upper range is probably higher, you know, maybe sub 50 million in revenue. It's certainly under 200 employees. I can't think of a client that I have personally that's over 100 employees. You know, and sometimes it's 12, you know.
Let's talk about everyone's favorite topic, cost control. So you go into a business that's all over the place. They're over their skis. The money's coming in. But what's your go-to move in terms of looking at cost control in a business that's doing well on the top line, but there's nothing on the bottom line?
Well, it's first getting a handle on the numbers. And quite frankly, you go in there and a lot of times you can look at their existing financial statements and you can identify like, this doesn't make sense. You know, their accounting processes, whatever it was, really don't reflect the business or were not even done accurately. So a lot of times, especially in the first 6 months or so, we're working with them to try to get a more accurate picture of the business. You know, what are they really doing from a gross profit margin? What are they really doing from, net profitability? Where is the money going, right? Do they have a profit problem or do they have a cash flow problem, right? A cash cycle problem along the way. So we're not coming in there with any preconceived notion of, you know, we're coming in to be the cost cutter. You know, that's the old cliche of a CFO. We're very much a strategic business partner. Maybe we come in and look at it and go, you know, parts of your business are actually really profitable and doing really well. But there's certain clients or certain products or certain service lines, whatever it is, that are sucking the wind, literally sucking the cash out of your business. Let's go take a look at those. And so it's not just coming in and being, you know, a bean counter, cost cutter. That's not a strategic partner.
Yeah, and it's deceptively difficult to actually get a clear view on that, right? It's very different to getting your taxes paid each year versus figuring out how your business is operating. Have you ever told anyone, hey, this business can't be saved? Shut up shop. Like, you get someone who's making a loss on every sale but trying to make it up in volume. Like
the old cliche. Yeah, I know.
Have you ever given anyone that advice? No, this ladder's against the wrong wall. You think you're making money. It can't be saved. That's it. Go home.
I can think of, you know, the years I've been doing this, I've had two clients that, you know, not just that you've lost so much money, but the ownership structure isn't right and they're not able to move it forward and they can't agree on anything. There's certain times we come in like your problems are more structural than what we can help you with. Right. So, yes, and occasionally we've walked away from that. But for the most part, you know, we do a pretty good job of getting to know each other before we ever engage in a client situation, in engagement. So we know what we're walking into most of the time, at least to some degree, and have a vision for how we want to help them coming forward.
So it's very growth focused, or hitting a target is really where you guys are. I get that straight from your energy.
EOS bingo or Jeopardy again, right? So what we do when we come into clients, and even if they're not running EOS, not only do we run our business on EOS, but our service delivery model is kind of based on the EOS methodology. So we come in there and we create, you know, we have this thing, we call it the climb the mountain form or plan. But it's, if anyone looked at it who knew EOS, it basically looks like a basic EOS vision, traction, organizer. What are your goals for the business? Kind of what are your long-term objectives? You know, 3 year, 5 year, down to, you know, 90 days. Let's create that plan. And then every quarter we revisit it with them. So we, you know, we get down to the point where our CFO identifies their rocks, right? Their priorities for the quarter, the issues that they're working in. And then we review that every quarter. And then we adjust that plan as we move forward so that not only it helps us be able to add value and it helps us not get caught up in a lot of times in the weeds of the business and forget why we're there and the owner forget why we're there, but we're setting an example, right, of being organized and how you plan, how you set goals and how you measure priorities and issues that come up. And what we're hoping is that if they're not running EOS or something like that, so it's not just EOS, they're seeing an example of how this could be run and be better organized. And we're kind of hopefully instilling that discipline into the rest of the business.
Who are good referral partners for you? Like, who do you really work well with? Sounds like you'd work very well with a EOS implementer. What other sort of organizations or people can refer business to you?
We have several. I'd say if we're going to categorize them, you know, you would think, you know, their banker or their CPA would be a good referral source. And they are on occasion because they're exposed to it. So they're typically seeing if there's a real problems in the business. And that's okay. But from a going forward, you know, a mindset, more of a strategic mindset, you know, if they have a business coach, I get a lot of referrals from business coaches and their personal financial planner, their wealth advisor for the owner. Because if you think about it, and that last one, I think is probably the most strategic for us. And I talk about this a lot internally within our organization. If you think about it, their wealth advisor is their personal financial planner for the owner. We're the financial planner for the business. So we're running on parallel paths, but have touch points or coordination points all along the way. And so that is a perspective. And the wealth advisor is the one who's talking about personal financial goals for both. So they have a longer term view from the owner and they're hearing and recognizing that what, you know, you may have goals to be here and retire here, but your business is probably only worth here right now. And you're never going to be able to do that unless we do things. But the wealth advisor can't come in and fix the business. But we're a go-to referral for that. And it works really well. And then at the end of the day, when the owner sells the business, and this is the key part that financial advisors sometimes miss, is that when we actually get to that endpoint where there's an exit and there's a nice liquidity event and there's a nice pot of money now that the owner has, we get a handshake and a case study, go, hey, nice job. Thank you guys. And we move on. The wealth advisor now has the opportunity now to manage a large pot of money on behalf of that owner. So it's kind of a golden ticket or a brass ring for them.
The three of them fit together really well. Obviously, the personal financial advisor, even the business coach, but the business coach is not going to be able to prepare that business for sale. You're still going to need someone. And even, I guess, the whole topic is actual, the process of deciding if you want to sell and then actually getting ready and then executing that sale, right? That's everything.
Right. And building the advisory team that you're going to need to ultimately be able to sell, of which we in the financial advisor are just two components of that.
What are the technology trends that you're seeing in your clients, or are there any?
They're all exploring ways to be more productive or be more effective with that. But it really depends on the business. I have a manufacturing client that is investing heavily in automated production equipment because they, quite frankly, even if they wanted to, they can't find the people, right? So the more that so we're investing heavily and we're helping them figure out how to do those capital expenditures and get the finance to be able to do it, because it ultimately results in a way more productive business that has more capacity, more revenue generating capacity on the other end. So it's being driven by necessity, right, along the way. Our industry is only going to get improved as, you know, these tools are improving, and, you know, you can do better reconciliations and manage, you know, cash flow, manage AP and AR. And that helps along the margins for what it is. But it's really more about what's going to drive efficiency and revenue growth opportunities within the clients. And that's very different from business to business.
So what I heard there was actually people's time is really the thing. You either can't, or you don't want to grow the headcount, but you need to, using technology to be able to scale more with the current staffing rates.
Yeah, I'd say that's the biggest driver I see in my businesses.
Michael, this has been very cool. I have to say, I got a lot of energy from talking to you. How can people reach out to you and find out more, either whether they want to consider being a fractional CFO or on their own bat right now, or they're looking for someone to help them grow and prepare their business for a possible sale or not?
I'd say the easiest thing is just come to our website. And I'm proud of that because I'm the marketing officer for the company. But we have a terrific website at focuscfo.com, where whether you're a business owner and you're thinking about, do I need a fractional CFO? Whether you are a CFO who's thinking about your next chapter becoming a fractional, there's a ton of information available there. Or even if you ask me about, you know, who are good referral partners, and you want to learn more about us and how potentially we could help your clients, we have information on there. So it's pretty comprehensive. We try to talk to all three of those audiences.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Gross Profit Podcast. I find it fascinating talking to different fractional CFOs. And what's clear is that there's really much about like a hand in a glove. There's all sorts of personalities out there. There's all sorts of people. And actually choosing a fractional CFO is really about finding that fit. And everyone has accounting degrees. Everyone can do plug the stuff in, but it's much more about the person you want to work with, which is why I actually like this format, because you get a sense of who people are and the culture and the values of the organization. So,
and there's also really, quite frankly, different models, different types of fractional CFOs. You know, there are folks who kind of do it virtually, just do a couple hours a month kind of thing, down to, you know, our model with embedded CFOs, where we're literally embedded on the leadership team and we're there every week with the client and various things in between. So there's not a one size fits all or one model. So it really pays for, you know, business owners to understand what their needs are and then talk and understand the different models of the different groups that are providing it.
All right. Thanks, Michael. And thanks for getting to this point in the podcast. You can always contact me at james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com, and we'll see you in the next one.